Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Benyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Is Tom Tancredo in another controversy? He is. All right. Well, he was scheduled to speak this week at Liberty University back east. And so we're trying to reach him right now because he's also scheduled to be the MC at the Colorado Right to Life Banquet this Saturday, 7 o'clock at the Renaissance in Northeast Denver at Old Stapleton at Quebec and 38th. Beautiful hotel, great place for a banquet. And it's right across the street from the Planned Parenthood. I mean, right across the street. And so it'll be a good time to come out to hear Alan Keyes, Kevin Swanson, and Tom Tancredo, who is once again in a controversy. And wow, what an honor to have Tom Tancredo back on the show. Tom, welcome back to Bob Benyart Live.
Thanks, Bob. Pleasure to join you.
Well, Tom, before we talk about the banquet coming right up Saturday night that you'll be emceeing, could you describe to us what's gone on with the invitation you received from Liberty University to speak this week? Because you were supposed to be on an airplane right now.
As we speak right now, I was to be on an airplane. That's correct. But yeah, here's what happened. A group of students there found out that Rick Perry was going to be speaking tomorrow and asked me, because they knew that, of course, I had been quite critical of Mr. Perry on his on a couple of things, in particular his position vis-a-vis illegal immigration.
For example, Rick Perry supported providing tax-subsidized tuition for some children of illegal aliens.
That's correct. And he also was a vociferous critic of Arizona and their attempts to deal with the problems they have down there. Mm-hmm. He criticized the Senate Bill 1030 and the sponsor. And it's probably the most important and I would suggest the most effective way of dealing with illegal immigration. But that bill was. But his opposition to it was not just, you know, a secondary sort of off-the-cuff remark. I mean, he went out of his way to attack it. So I have some concerns about that. I certainly have raised them. I wrote an article about him. And during the campaign, when I was running for the Republican nomination for president, a lady came up to me who I was at an event in Iowa, and she said, you know, I just got back from Texas. I actually live there, she said, and I was out here visiting. I wanted to come and hear you speak because I was just at an event where Governor Perry said that we should avoid listening to you and that you were indeed a racist. And I said, Governor Perry, like the guy in Texas? I mean, I really didn't know much about him at the time. I just knew he was the governor. And she said, yeah. And I said, well, what was the problem? How did it even come up? I don't even understand how it came up in the conversation. And she just said, well, he was at an event, and somebody asked him about you and about immigration, and he said that anybody takes a position that like you take is a racist. So the next day, I called Governor Perry's office, and I was not able to talk to him. They would not put me through, but I was able to talk to his chief of staff. And I raised these questions. One, why did he say this? Number two, if he's got some sort of proof to back up such an allegation, I'd like to see it. What have I ever written, said, or done that can be categorized that way?
Tom, for probably 20 years, I've been on the air daily for 20 years, TV, radio, and over those years, you've spoken at various events in Colorado, and I was at a number of them, whether it's a backyard barbecue or Republican Party events. You were elected a congressman to Washington. If ever I had a hint that you were a racist or that you didn't have a love for all men and a respect that were made in God's image, I mean, that would have been such a major red flag and cause to oppose you. For anyone to say that you are a racist is a claim against all evidence, a lifetime of public involvement. It's just completely unjust.
Well, thank you, and I agree. I don't like it when people, because what happens is people will use that word because they hope it ends the discussion. They usually don't want to actually debate the issue. They just want to use epithets like that in the hopes that it shuts down the discussion. And so I challenged his chief of staff to present some evidence or to have, if in a lack thereof, to have the governor apologize for the statement. Of course, my requests went unheeded. We called back several times trying to contact the governor personally. He would never take my call. So that was my history with him. That is why when he announced and presented himself as this stalwart conservative, I took some issue with that. So well, I wrote the article. It appeared in Politico, and he and some kids, students at the university, at Liberty University, must have read it and agreed with it. And so asked me to come and speak to their group, called Students for Youth for Western Civilization. And so I said, sure, I'd be happy to. And they wanted me to come out tomorrow. So I agreed to do that. They, in turn, told the administration that they had asked me to come and speak to their group. The administration told them that they would not be allowed to bring me on campus. So
this is just extraordinary. The people who are tolerant and believe in free speech and diversity are
Liberty
the most
university.
They're the most intolerant group of people in the world. When they claim tolerance, free speech, and diversity, you could just know that they actually practice the opposite.
That's exactly right. And so they said no. So the kids said, "Well, what shall we do?" So they went to a professor and who was sympathetic, and got the professor to ask me to come and speak to his class, because they thought that that was a way around getting administration approval for their group, which was is legally organized on campus. It's not as if they were a rogue organization. But they went to a professor. He had indeed extended an invitation for me to come and speak to his class
tomorrow. Clearly there's academic freedom, right?
Well, evidently not, because within 24 hours, he rescinded the request on the basis that the administration essentially threatened to fire him if he brought me in. So we posted all of that on Facebook, and that was sort of the end of it. But I was going to go and stand out in front of the gate if I had to and speak. Well, next thing you know, the administration reneged. They backed down and said, "Yeah, okay, never mind. Must have been some miscommunication. He can come and speak." So everything was back on. The kids bought my ticket. I was getting on a plane, and last night at about 10 o'clock, I got a call saying, indeed, someone apparently from the Perry campaign had raised the issue with them, and I do not know what went on. I don't know what was said. If anything, it's just that we were told that that was the case and that I could no longer speak on the campus, and that they would, however, provide me with a bigger venue sometime later if I would agree to come back. Well, in order for the kids to get repaid for their ticket and the expenses they've already undergone, because they essentially agreed to do that. So I didn't want the kids to get stuck with, you know, the cost of everything on the front end. So I have agreed that I will come back at some other time, and we'll see if they will really let me.
Well, yeah, because so far you've been invited and rescinded and re-invited and stopped, re-invited and rescinded. So now
you're re-invited. That's exactly right.
And a racist, of course, is someone winning an argument with a liberal. There are real racists. And then there, you know, that's another check mark in the column that Rick Perry is a liberal, because he calls somebody a racist just because he's losing the argument.
Yeah. And there's another thing. And I don't know how much time we have to talk about this, but Rick Perry, the night that he announced his candidacy, his people called a guy by the name of Juan Hernandez and asked Mr. Hernandez to be a part of his campaign. Now, Let me tell you about Mr. Hernandez. Juan Hernandez is a dual citizen of the United States and Mexico. He was a teacher, a professor at the University of Texas, but he was also made part of the Vicente Fox cabinet in Mexico. Hmm. He took over, he was the first person to be named to head a newly created agency under the Fox regime called the Ministry for Mexicans Living in the United States.
Wow.
Yeah, and
so you have a cabinet post for Mexicans living in another country. That's pretty
interesting. Isn't that something? So right. I was down in Mexico shortly after he was made head of this ministry, and it was created, and had an opportunity to speak with him, along with a couple of other members of Congress I had led down there in a delegation. And prior to that time, I didn't know him or really anything about him. I just kept saying, What is this ministry? I've never heard of such a thing in my life. A ministry for your own citizens living in another. He said it's too. Anyway, he is an incredibly articulate and sort of sophisticated character who was very candid. And he said to me, the purpose of the organization, of the ministry, Ministry for Mexicans Living in the United States, is to increase the flow. His words, increase the flow. I said, flow, you're talking about goods, services, trade?
Maybe the Rio Grande or something.
Yeah, he said, no, the flow of people.
He must have meant the flow of people, very unfortunate people from Central America into Mexico. That must
right.
be the flow. Isn't
right.
it something how hypocritical how the demands Mexico makes on America are exactly the opposite of what they're willing to do to immigrants from their southern border.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So we continued our conversation. I said, I really am astounded at that. You mean to tell me that the purpose of this organization is to increase the number of Mexicans moving from Mexico to the United States legally? He said, legally or anyway. I said, this is really amazing that you are admitting to this. He said, I'll show you the video that we show them on the buses that we use to transport them. Mm. And he showed us a video that explained to them what their, quote, rights were if they were detained by the Border Patrol, what they could claim, how to avoid detection. This is all something the Mexican government was doing and paying for. I actually observed, we were on the border once, I saw through field glasses a bus pull up to the border, and people simply got out and walked into the desert. And it was a bus provided by the government of Mexico through the ministry that this guy ran. When I said to him, I mean, I didn't know it at the time. At the time, I didn't know the connection between that bus and the government of Mexico. I thought, what the? And I even mentioned to the Border Patrol agent who I was with, look, these people are going out into the desert. He says, I know, we'll get them. We'll go down there and get them. Well, I don't know whether they did or didn't. But I said to Hernandez, what? I said, you know what? He said, look, he goes, it's a win-win situation for Mexico and the United States. We send you our unemployed youth, of which there are 45% between the ages of 18 and 25. He says, a very unstable condition here, creates an instability in the country. He says, we send them to you, you get cheap labor, they then send money back to Mexico. At that time, he quoted $23 billion. It was closer to $30 billion a year, that Mexicans send back. And of course, it's upwards of $100 billion sent back from immigrants all over America to their home country. And he said, $23 billion a year, he said. And he said, also, he says, there's another thing. The more Mexican nationals we have living in the United States, the more it will affect your government's policies vis-a-vis Mexico.
Right.
And I said, well, I appreciate your candor. And I have, by the way, debated him now three or four times on national television in the United States. And I bring this up every time. He does not deny anything that I'm telling you. He said, there were other congressmen there with me. Daryl Issa was one who's now leading that investigation on Gunwalker. But the I said, but I must admit to you, Mr. Hernandez, I believe that what you've just described to me is are actions that that are not taken by a friendly government, by a friend of the United States. And he said to me, Congressman, in this ultra sort of condescending voice, he goes, Congressman, it's not two countries. It's just a region.
Wow.
He went on to become John McCain's advisor on Hispanic issues.
This is,
and he has been contacted by Perry to fill the same spot.
And it's not surprising, right? Rick Perry, I know we got to go back pretty far, but he was Al Gore's presidential campaign manager for the state of Texas.
That's right. That's right.
And the whole Gardasil fiasco, where he issued an executive order saying that 12-year-old girls throughout Texas should be vaccinated against a sexually transmitted disease. 12-year-old girls, and he issued this by executive order, and then it turns out that his chief of staff was the lead lobbyist in the state of Texas for Merck, the pharmaceutical company that manufactures and sells the vaccine. I mean, you couldn't get more left-wing, broken, conflict of interest than Rick Perry with his tendency toward leftist ideas. And here he is, the number one candidate right now for the Republican presidential nomination.
It's a very interesting world in which we live.
Yeah, it sure is.
You know, when you mentioned, it's been a while. 88 is when he was the Gore campaign chairman. But just think about this now. When you are not just a supporter, you're not even just a precinct worker.
Right.
You are the state chairman for Gore. Now, you know, either your commitments are pie crust kind of promises.
Flaky.
Or you really and truly believed what you believed, and now you have to think about a way to characterize everything because
right.
You're in a different ballgame.
Just like many other politicians for
right.
state and federal office. And with Rick Perry, you don't just go back to when he did these very anti-conservative things, but you go back to when he defended them, which is always many years more recently, including with Gardasil. That was in 2007. But very recently, he said, you know, I was wrong. I should have had a conversation first.
Yeah.
Rather than an executive decree, an executive order. Well, that's not an apology.
No.
I should have had a conversation first.
Right.
He says,
I should have gone to the legislature
right.
and told them to do it. He said it was a mistake, but he does not characterize his
position
his,
as fun
commitment to it as
right.
a mistake, just
right.
just the process.
Just the assumption that every 12-year-old Texan little girl is going to be sexually immoral and that the government knows better than the culture and that we want to mandate this vaccine. Of course, with all vaccines, there's a way to opt out. But and for his chief of staff to be a lobbyist for Merck, it's just all too corrupt. So, Tom, maybe we could transition because there's something going on in Mexico that I don't know if you're aware of. Just like in America, that there's a vibrant personhood movement that started really right here in Colorado with the 2008 and 2010 personhood amendments, the statewide campaigns. In Mexico, there is a very well-orchestrated, aggressive personhood movement that has now succeeded in getting personhood amendments passed in a dozen states in Mexico, and so that the rights of the unborn child are recognized from the time of their concepciones, and we have a strong working relationship between the personhood movement in America and the personhood movement in Mexico. Both are encouraging one another and sharing strategy and ideas and solidifying the principles that were made in God's image and likeness. That's why we have this right to life. And the lawlessness that illegal immigration is a symptom of, that lawlessness begins with setting aside God's command, do not kill the innocent. So you speak in...
Very interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, and it's really encouraging. In fact, there have been meetings with personhood folks in Mexico and personhood folks in America. There are Hollywood efforts for major motion pictures, including Bella, that's been very successful, that's beginning to reach the masses with the personhood message. Eduardo Verástegui is a crossover movie star who's behind some of this. And so you're speaking Saturday night. Well, you're the MC.
Well, I'm MCing, yeah.
You're MCing.
Not sure how much speaking I'll be doing, but yeah,
Well, you're MCing, and I've heard Alan Keyes on Denver Radio saying that he campaigned against you for the Republican presidential nomination,
right,
but that you guys are coming together to stand up for the right to life of the unborn child.
Yeah, well, good. I have not heard anything on the radio, but I've been distracted here recently and haven't even
sure
been listening. So, I'll be there and looking forward to it.
All right.
Hope to see a lot of old friends there.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you,
Tom Tancredo, for joining us.
Bye-bye.
All right. So looking forward to that. Tom Tancredo, the MC, and Alan Keyes will be the main speaker, and Kevin Swanson, homeschool advocate and leader known nationwide, especially for his work here in Colorado. So please come on out. I don't know if I have one seat left at my table. I don't. But come on out. Call Colorado Right to Life. Go to the website and just click to register, or call them 303-753-9394. Now, let's go. Is this Pennsylvania or PA? It's Pennsylvania. Dick, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Hi, Bob. How you doing tonight?
Doing great, sir.
Hey, a couple of weeks ago, your dear mother called one morning to update my information on my donation account, and
so
we got talking.
All right, so Connie called from the office.
Right.
All right.
And I was telling her about how I'd come across you in the middle of the night when you were on Channel 40 back here in Pennsylvania, and how I thought you were a nutcase.
Oh, yeah. We were on in 80 cities, five nights a week. Most of them between 10 o'clock and midnight, but some of them through the Cornerstone Network, we were on in the wee hours of the morning.
Yeah, that's when it was.
Yeah.
Well, the more I listened to you, the more I got enthralled with you. And about the same time that that was going on, I was really into listening to people in church preaching and that. And I started questioning some of the things that they were saying. I've been a Bible reader since 1954 when I graduated from high school. I went to college for Christian college for 3 years and had Bible courses there. And then I got saved in 1975. And when I did, God opened up the Bible to me, and I really started reading it. And
well, praise God. And, Dick, I became a believer in 1973, and so we have a similar story. And I agree with you, so much are cliches, so
right,
much Bible teaching are cliches that are not biblical. In fact, I could tell a story about that from a Bible study this morning at a major Denver church, which has affirmed some of the key teachings of Bob and Yurt Live for the last 20 years. But go ahead. We only have a few more minutes.
Okay. Well, then you began to advertise the plot, and I sent and got a copy of it, and I started reading it, and I started picking bits here and there, answers to questions that I was having, and the more I read it, the more I liked it, so I got a couple of copies, and I gave it to friends, and we discussed it. And I've come to the conclusion that young Christians, as soon as they get saved and they start hungering for the Word, they're being saturated by everything that everybody's saying around about them, and they're not knowledgeable enough yet to be able to discern everything in the Scripture. And I think that I want to say that I believe that the plot is a very valuable tool for those kind of people to get them started off on a right foot in reading the Scriptures and understanding them. And
well, Dick, that's very kind of you. I'll give you 20 minutes to cut that out.
But okay.
Yeah, the goal of it is to look at the big picture, the story of the Bible, And once we are confident with the story of the Bible, then the details begin to fall in place almost effortlessly.
That's right. So what I want to do, I know you're doing your campaign for funding that.
Yeah.
I'm going to send you an extra $100 this month.
Oh, wow.
And what I'd like you to do, the first five people that call in, you give them a $20 discount.
Oh.
On the plot.
On the plot. Wow,
right.
That is so encouraging, Dick.
Okay, and then I'm ordering a copy for my daughter. She's been reading mine, and I want it back
wow.
so I can read it.
Wow, so that would be six plots, and that
right.
would mean we're up to $2,800, which would be 14% of our way toward our goal of $20,000.
Okay.
Because the plot is $50, and we know that's a lot of money. It helps keep Bob and Yurt live on the air. People have told us it's worth many times that, and it comes with a money-back guarantee.
It is. That's great.
All
and
right.
the only
well, it's
thing
an honor.
That I want to say is start reading at the front. Don't skip to the back and try to pick it up because it's not going to make sense to you. But
yes.
if you start at the front of it.
Right, because it's all
through,
a story. And,
right.
you know, if you're really bent out of shape about certain doctrinal idiosyncrasies, then you have your favorite proof text.
That's right.
But if you're looking at a story, nobody jumps to the middle of a story.
That's correct.
You take a story from the beginning and you go through it and you understand the twist and the turns, the plot and the plot twist.
Then it makes sense.
Very good. Hey, Dick, that's so encouraging. I'm so thankful.
Well, I love you. I listen to you on the computer all the time and I support you every month. And,
well, what a joy to hear from you. Thank you so much for calling.
Okay.
Dick. I do appreciate that. And Connie will talk to you and get all those details. So this morning, one of the major churches in Denver had a Bible study at 6:30, and one of the elders of Denver Bible Church was asked to come because the mutual friend said, your church doesn't teach the Bible right. You got to come to our church. This is the best Bible study out there. So Will Duffy went. He's one of the elders at Denver Bible Church, and he called me up because I was interested. He called me up and said, Bob, here's what they taught, that judging is necessary for Christians, that judge not is a cliche and it's a false teaching. Now, that's one of the major teachings of Bob and Yurt Live for 20 years in Denver Bible Church. It's online at kgov.com/judging. It's been there forever. And so then the death penalty. This pastor of this church said we have to support the death penalty, and he gave the New Testament verses for the death penalty. He even talked about Hebrew parallelism and inverted parallelism, which was part of our debate on baptism at the Church of Christ last Thursday night. So everything he said were key teachings of Denver Bible Church. So what's going on here? Life is confusing.